You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Golf Unfiltered podcast. A very special episode today. It's become an annual thing, I think, with our guest today. But before we get into today's guest, Nikki Dunnigan is my co-host again today. Nikki, it's always good to see you, my friend. How are you today?
I am good. It is great to be here. The weather is starting to get a little bit warmer, which means that it is getting That's close right. to Masters. So
I sure do. It's that. A big, big part of GU. And of course, we are so happy to welcome back for the second time, executive producer of the hit Netflix series, Full Swing, season two coming up very soon. Chad Mumm. Chad, it's so nice to have you back on.
Great to be back, Adam. Nikki, thanks for having me. I think last time I was standing on the phone was propped up on a Toro box outside of TPC, or what was it, Torrey Pines, like the 18th hole of Torrey. We had just started filming season two when I was telling you all about season one. So, you know, it's nice to be back a year later with the show finished.
Yeah. And it's great to have you here. And it's so successful. Season one was just something that all of us golf fans loved so much. I mean, how are you feeling right now? Are you just filled with anticipation for everyone else to see what you've done?
I mean, it's a huge team effort. So first off, got to give a shout out to like the entire Full Swing season two team. This year was an amazing year filming. I mean, we shot 900 hours of footage and had like 10,000 hours of archive that we pulled together to make this these eight episodes that you're going to see here very soon. So I couldn't be prouder. I couldn't be more excited. I love what we did with season two. I think it's a total step up from season one, and you know, we throw you right into the action. You know, if you watched all of season two or season one, season two picks up right where we left off, and it throws you into just this absolutely bonkers and unexpected year in professional golf. So I'm excited for you to see it.
Now, I do have to ask a quick question about the poster for season two, which I'm going to pull up here on the screen. Was there an inspiration for the putt-putt? Was it Keegan Bradley playing putt-putt after the U.S. Open miscut? Was that?
You know, that's all on the Netflix marketing team. We get to weigh in a little bit on the key art and stuff. But this year, you know, I think for them, season one was so successful and had such a broader audience than I think maybe anybody expected. And it wasn't just hardcore golf fans. And the show had like a lot of a very sort of male-female split audience, which was amazing for a sports show. And I think like they wanted to lean into the like Selling Sunset-esque posters for the show a little bit more and have a little fun with it. So, you know, they came to me in at the end of the summer and they, you know, they said, hey, is there any chance that we could get some time with the players, shoot some very specific composed photos for some key art ideas that we have? And so we set it up and they did a bunch of these photo shoots. And then they finally sent this to us like right before the holidays. And it's like, I think it's so fun and so cool. And there's a little homage to all the different settings for the season. There's the Coliseum at Marcus Simone. You could see some nods to LA, you know, LA Country Club and Hoy, you know, it's a lot of fun. And you know, it's not everybody in the show is on the poster. So there's some surprises in for you. My favorite was the Tom Kim pants detail. So if you zoom in, you can see the mud on Tom Kidd's pants, which again was something that we had no idea was coming and everybody got about it. They actually, I think, added that after they sent us the key art. So it was a surprise to me as well when they posted it on Twitter and we could see it, which was hilarious.
It's a great ad. It's a little Easter egg that everyone, you know, who knows, and they went and looked for it. And it was a nice addition there. You had mentioned the end of season one. It was kind of transitioning into the heat of the LIV Golf disruption, I would say. And you said that that's kind of where season two picks up.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, season one ends with like Rory McIlroy, newly crowned FedEx Cup Tour champion, number one in the world. And like, obviously on this rocket ship and clearly like with something to prove on the golf course. And season two kind of starts off like right there. Rory's number one in the world. It's the beginning of a new year. This is going to be his year where he, you know, blitzes the world and kind of proves that the PGA Tour is the place. And it doesn't quite go according to plan. And, you know, he gave us amazing access throughout the whole season. And it's fascinating to see kind of really inside his mind and inside his world as he watched all the LIV players come back to Augusta for the first time and those guys tee it up, you know, really, really for the first real time. I mean, they, you know, played a little bit at the end of, you know, at the end of the year, in the previous year, but this was really like the first reunion. And it didn't go at all how I think anybody expected. I mean, for one, Brooks and Rory play a practice round together. That kind of shocked the world. Obviously, Rory,
right,
you know, heartbreakingly misses the cut and, you know, is kind of, obviously you'll see in the show just how frustrated he was, where his game was at. And then, you know, it all kind of culminates in like Brooks winning the PGA Championship, which is a narrative that I don't think anybody who watched season one could ever expect. I mean, let alone us. And to see that lead right into the moment of June 6th, where the PGA Tour and the PIF announced this like strategic framework agreement for a potential merger, is just, you can't write it. You really can't. So you just kind of see like this kind of, you know, this moment in time where, you know, someone's world is completely kind of, the rug's pulled out from under them. It's a fascinating look inside of one of the best players in the world's mind, that the most kind of interesting moment of maximum pressure and controversy. And it's fascinating. And then the show just kind of only picks up from there. I mean, we just hit the gas from that moment on.
You know, talking about moments that you can't write, the NFL played into kind of the rumors that they've had circulating for several years about how they're scripted, and their promo at the beginning of the season was that all the players sat down and had a script and that they were scripted. And what were there any moments as you were filming throughout the year that made you go, oh my God, people are not going to believe that this is real. People are going to think that we scripted this as a TV show.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that way all the time. It's been uncanny the last 2 years, just how we had cameras in the right place at the right time. And, you know, I'll just give an example of, from June 6th, you know, that was a day where it was a Tuesday. Monday was US Open sort of sectional qualifying. So we happened to have a lot of cameras out filming with players that, you know, were trying to qualify for the US Open. And then we had sent a crew up to RBC Canadian Open in Toronto to follow Ludvig Åberg on his first day as a tour player. So he was like going to register. And I mean, it was just all the boring stuff that I think is really interesting of like what it's like your first day on tour. And that was an extremely like low stakes shoot, or so we thought. It was just like, hey, go up there, see if we get anything good, ride with them to the course, check in, what's that like? And, you know, we had thought that Ludvig was going to be a potentially a superstar. And honestly, we were following him because we thought he might have like a dark horse chance of getting in the Ryder Cup team. And so we're like, okay, let's just kind of start following him. Of course, that day we happen to have cameras on site, like when the merger news gets announced, and, you know, in the locker room, all the guys are standing around watching the news unfold on CNBC and live, like in real time, as our cameras are there. It's sort of unbelievable. We had other crews like out with other players in their cars, like getting texts while that was happening. I mean, players like on camera live getting the text from their agent, like finding out what was going on. I mean, it was unbelievable how lucky we were to have cameras there kind of out in the field on that day. If it had happened like 2 days later, we would have barely had any coverage of it. So, you know, you just get good breaks. And I mean, we had no idea it was coming, so much so that I was in LA. I got a text from our Netflix exec at 7:30 in the morning, and I thought the PGA Tour's website had been hacked. I mean, I was so shocked that I thought it couldn't even be real. And, but sure enough, we had our cameras there in the right place at the right time. So, you know, that that had that feeling. And, you know, and then even just like some of the ways the story's unfolded, like you'll see the episode three really centers on Joel Damon and Wyndham Clark and their kind of parallel journeys after the death of their mothers. And like, that's a pairing that I think if we'd have put down on a spreadsheet somewhere or put on a whiteboard, we would have never really made that connection. You know, we wouldn't have thought that those two players had so much in common, but the story fits together so naturally. And it's really like, it's amazing. That's actually the first episode that we finished this season. Cause it just, it's like it all dovetailed so well. And the story just fits in perfect moment in time. And I think, you know, it will be another, you know, Joel again, I think will be a fan favorite because it's, you know, his story is something that no one still has any idea what went on. And you'll see when you watch the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did access to these players change in any way? I know the first season, it was almost, you know, one directional. You had to reach out and say, hey, do you want to be part of this thing? Did any players come to you and say, hey, I want to be part of this?
Yeah, we definitely had a lot of inbound this season, given like, I think people saw what it was and got a chance to kind of understand, okay, like this is what this looks like. And, you know, honestly, like hats off to all the season one cast for like raising their hand kind of sight unseen and putting their trust in me and our team to deliver. But we certainly got a lot of interest from people who had seen kind of the effect that the show had had on some of their peers and, you know, a lot of hands raised, a lot of agents reaching out saying, hey, what about my guy? And, you know, one of those was Wyndham Clark, to be honest. And, you know, talk about being right. I mean, his agent, Robert Moogie, just chased me down and was like, you got to put Wyndham in the show. And I promise this is going to be a big year. And he started telling me his story and we said, sure. And sure enough, he goes on, wins the US Open. So hats off to Robert for being right. And giving us an amazing episode.
Are there any player? I remember last time we talked, you kind of called it and said that you think that the Brooks episode was going to be one that people really latched onto and kind of was a turning point on people's point of view for Brooks. Because at the time, a lot of people, Brooks had just left to go to live. And there was some kind of negative opinions about that. Can we kind of expect that with any other players this year, where there might be some storylines that kind of change people's opinion on a player?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think people, at least some certain side of the internet or what I read about on Twitter, I think people have a very strong opinion in both directions about Rory McIlroy. And I think this show for this season, you know, shows a whole different side of Rory and his willingness to have the cameras around when things weren't going his way. I think he deserves a lot of credit, but also just like seeing him in the whirlwind of everything that was going on and sort of how kind of out of loop he was, given how much he had sort of sacrificed to put himself out there on behalf of, you know, what he believed in. So I think, you know, I hope that that wins people over to his side. And I've been a Roy fan for a long time and just like even more so after, you know, seeing this episode. I think the Ryder Cup in general, the you know, Keegan Bradley storyline for the Ryder Cup is just, it's so good and so interesting and so powerful. And his heartbreak is so real. And you just see how much being on that team meant to him and letting us have our cameras there when he received a call that he thought was going to be a yes, turned out to be a no, was just takes a lot of like trust and a lot of just commitment to being willing to like let that be on camera. And so hats off to Keegan. But, you know, even just like the access we had to both captains, to Luke and to Zach, you know, Luke Donald and Zach Johnson, like the how those teams get built, like how much they agonize over their choices, kind of knowing that like their playing career may be winding down and the Ryder Cup captaincy is kind of their final chance to put a stamp on their career and stamp on their legacy. And like the risk that comes from that, you know, you can build a legacy or you can like ruin it by your captaincy and just how high stakes that is for them and for their families. You know, nobody's seen that before. Nobody's ever seen it like in the moment. No one's seen how many hours of like debate and how much discussion goes into it and how much planning and like the relationship between going from being someone's peer to their captain. It's like, you know, these guys are all individuals. They don't have bosses really. So all of a sudden now they've got a boss, like a captain. It's an interesting dynamic, and both of those guys handled it in different ways. And I think like it's a fascinating study of leadership and team building and the different approaches that both sides took, and obviously led to the results that, you know, that happened to Rome. And like, it's just a fascinating look. And honestly, both captains, I like give tons of credit to. I think they both agonized over their choices and decisions and did everything they could to put the team in the best place to win. And, you know, it's just, it's so hard to win a Ryder Cup on the road. I think that's the, that's my big takeaway. Like, you know, that will become, I think, one of the most difficult feats in all of sports to accomplish. And eventually someone's going to win a road game, and it's going to be unbelievable.
So you talk about the Ryder Cup, and we were wondering, did access or the manner in which these players were filmed, that maybe even their attitudes, did it shift at all when Ryder Cup time hit?
Yeah, you know, the Ryder Cup for us was a season long narrative arc that I think gave the whole season like this propulsive feeling, like moving towards something. And one of the hardest parts of season one, to be honest, is like we could only follow at most maybe 12 guys at a big tournament, like at a major. And you just kind of have to hope that you get lucky. I mean, we can pivot a little bit. Like if someone, you know, misses the cut, obviously that crew can move off onto someone else. But, you know, then you haven't been filming with them all week. So it's just very hard. You kind of have to get lucky. We did. We got lucky last year with Scotty. We got lucky with Matt Fitzpatrick. Like there was definitely some good breaks. But getting to the Ryder Cup, like it was the first time that as producers, like we actually knew that we were going to get a winner and a loser. Like there's no T11, you know, there's no like T23 where you just kind of, like I had a good week, like top 25, but didn't win, didn't like miss the cut, you know, whatever. That's the kiss of death for this show. You know, you spend all this time investing in a character or a player, and then like they just do okay. It's really hard to spin that into something like super interesting. And for the Ryder Cup, it was like, we knew it was something that was really important to everybody involved. It was something that was important to them at the very beginning of the season. I told, you know, the story at the beginning of this podcast that last time I was on, I was at Torrey Pines, like with my phone propped up on a sprinkler system thing. And I had just come out of interviewing Keegan Bradley, and we started his first interview. It was an audio only interview. And, you know, he sat down in the first like 2 minutes of the conversation, said the most important thing for him that year is to make the Ryder Cup team, that he'd played well. He'd won in Japan, you know, kind of in the fall. He was feeling really good. And he's like, this might be my last chance. You know, I'm getting older, like late 30s. I've got kids. Like this is probably my last shot. So I'm going to give everything I got. This is the most important thing to me, more than winning another major. Like getting on that Ryder Cup team is the most important thing. And I'm going to do everything I can to get there. Cause he kind of knew that he'd have to qualify. Yeah,
I've already cried about this once last year. Like the episode hasn't even aired, and
it's so real, you know. And so anyway, so like that became for us, like following Keegan, you know, it wasn't like in the past season where he had to win a major for it to really pay off, or he had to win the FedEx Cup, or he had to, you know, it was just like he had to make that team. And he could play his way on, but it wasn't all at one event. It was like incrementally, like a difference between a top 15 and a top 10, like started to matter. And you just could feel like the pressure building of like, even though he won, you know, last year at Travelers, like it wasn't quite enough to like auto qualify. So now it's like down to the picks. And then it's like, okay, well, how do you set yourself up to be one of those picks? Like didn't have an amazing tour championship. So that was like, you know, it's like, you just get this pressure that gets to build over the course of an entire season, that across the whole show, really, that culminates in like these multiple dramatic moments, like one where Zach Johnson picks up the phone and starts making phone calls and either like breaks people's hearts or, you know, is the best phone call they get all year or maybe their whole career. And we knew that those calls were going out. So we had cameras there. And it's just so rare in this show to be able to know where to be when something dramatic is going to happen. I mean, I said earlier on June 6th, we got lucky. We had cameras out in the field, but like for the Ryder Cup calls, like we knew who was getting calls. We didn't really know yes or no until right before, but we knew we had cameras there when the calls went out. And it's just an incredibly real moment. Like you can't imagine how you would feel in that situation. And to see like real emotion that doesn't involve like holding a putt or hitting a great shot. Like it's really good. And then you actually get to Rome. So then the team's set, and then you fall out from that. And then you got all this debate about the picks and who deserved to be on there and who didn't. And then they all go to Rome. And now it's like this week long simmering like tension of like, we're all going to pose for pictures together. We're all going to dress up together. Everybody's super happy. Here we go. And then you show up and it's not even light out. Like the dawn hasn't broken. There's 30,000 people pressed up against a fence that's about to get open. And then all of a sudden the doors open, the whole crowd rushes over to the first tee. And somehow Scottie Scheffler's got to hit a driver off the tech, off of the tee in front of like 30,000 people who are absolutely like going crazy. So excited to kick things off. And the drama just like builds from there, you know, all the way to the events of Saturday and the almost fight that broke out on the 18th green and just like the car park afterwards. And then the Team USA's comeback during singles match, you know, Sunday singles. I mean, just, I was there. We all watched it. Like, I still watched the episode. I'm like, I don't know how much this is going to end. You know, it really is. It's an amazing event to culminate the season with, and was one that enabled us to kind of make this season a lot more narrative, a lot more linear, like in order, and kind of be able to build these macro storylines that kind of affected the players throughout the season, even if they weren't necessarily getting super focused on for that episode. You know, already know this cast, the audience knows who's in the show, and you can kind of bounce around a little bit more. And I think like really make it, it's more like a drama TV show as opposed to just like profiles of golfers.
Now you mentioned some of the debate on which players should be there, which players shouldn't. You know, do you guys touch on some of the, cause obviously all season long golf Twitter is making that debate, but especially the closer it got to the Ryder Cup, golf Twitter picked up a lot of that debate. You know, do some of the other people, you know, outside of Keegan and some of the other players, did they touch on that debate and how they are aware of that debate that's going on, you know, definitely, as those picks are coming up?
Oh, yeah. No, they're all aware. They're all, you know, they also get questions about it all the time at tournaments. You know, they're whether they are on social media or not, like they're getting asked about it and, you know, it's right in their face. There's no place to hide. So absolutely. I mean, Justin Thomas particularly, like, you know, you could feel the pressure he was putting on himself to, you know, to play his way onto that team and to give it, to make that choice easy for Zach. And, you know, and I think even in the moment of when he got the phone call, he didn't think it was a yes. Like he wasn't confident that it was a yes. And honestly, like Justin, by all intents, like just like showed why he deserved to be there. Like he played great. He, you know, he totally delivered and was a bright spot for Team Day. And I think like, and a spark that they needed. So, you know, whether or not you can always at Monday morning quarterback the way the choices were made. And I think this show, you'll get to see it like in real time, actually how those choices were made and why. But Justin like delivered when it mattered. And, you know, they didn't bring home the cup, but, you know, he played well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. JT's Nikki's guy.
Yeah, yeah. I've already made a public apology about my opinions. You also mentioned the car park afterwards and the almost fight on the 18th green. And you mentioned earlier about the selling sunset aspect of this. Is there, we've talked about some of the storylines and the characters people have latched onto that they really loved, like Joel and the Brooks storyline. Are there any villains that we might see, you know, not villain maybe is too strong of a word, but are there any characters that, you know, we'll call them Selling Sunset-esque characters for lack of better, I feel like villain may be too strong, but.
Yeah, I mean, villain's a strong word. You know, the Ryder Cup creates easy heroes and easy antagonists. And I think like, there's one player in particular that stands out for being an antagonist to the European team, which ended up giving his team a real spark that, you know, I think is the thing that brought them back into the tournament. So whether that's villainy or just cold killerness, you know, they call him Iceman for a reason. So, you know, I think that you'll see that a little bit in the show. And I think like, you know, from both sides that what happened on Saturday and the way that went down and the play that followed that, you know, sort of story that Jamie Weir wrote, how that player in particular backed it up on the golf course is just like, I mean, it's stone cold killer stuff. Like it's awesome. So yeah, I don't think anybody looks like a villain per se, but definitely on the golf course, absolutely an antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about the Keegan profile, a new character, so to speak, in season two. I love to see Ricky in the trailer. I'm excited to see Ricky. How was that experience?
Oh my God, Ricky. Listen, I mean, Ricky Fowler was the first player to say yes to Full Swing before it was even called Full Swing. I mean, he committed to the show like 5 years ago and, you know, and was along waiting patiently as we figured out how to put it together and sell it to Netflix. I mean, Ricky was the first player in. I mean, him, Justin Thomas, Tony Finau, those were the first three. And we filmed with Ricky starting from day one, and we filmed all last season with him. And we had to call his agent at the end of the year and say, he's not making it in. And for a guy like Ricky Fowler, like that's, you know, I mean, I never got a call from him or anything. I didn't know if he was mad or not, but like, he gave us a lot of access, and he gave us a lot of access to his family, and Allison, his wife, like gave us a lot of access, and it didn't make it in the show because he didn't have an ending. And our pitch back to him was like, you're close. When we started filming, you were like 165th in the world. I think in the first episode of last season, like his lower third says like 165 or 132 or something. It was in the hundreds. And by the end of the year, he had like climbed his way back and was, you know, working with Butch Harmon again. And we said to him, listen, like, you're going to get back in the winner's circle. Like, it's coming. Like, you can feel it. You know, it's coming. We all know it's coming. So like, be patient and trust us, because when you do, when that happens for you, we will have the goods for like a whole 2 years of your journey, not just for the moment, right when you win. So he did, he trusted us. And the payoff is like, I mean, if you don't tear up at that ending, like, it's just the near miss in Los Angeles at the Open, and then, you know, going to Detroit and finally getting it done. You know, it just, you feel it so much. And the fact that that episode is made up of almost 2 years of footage just gives us that many, you know, that many more tools, you know, and that much more of a palette to paint with. It's just, I love that episode. I'm super proud of it.
With the first season, there was a few kind of jokes that went around about the explanation of what a cut was and how often that kind of came up. How did you guys approach going into season two with the added events that did not have a cut? How did you guys, you know, approach that after having explained it multiple times?
You know, I hope I don't get accused of just totally ignoring the cut in season two, but I don't actually think it comes up once. So, you know, the good thing is for any season one, I mean, I think the big thing to realize is like Netflix is such a big audience. Like, it's almost unfathomable to imagine like a piece of creative work, like going out into hundreds of millions of households. Like, it is really, really unfathomably large. And in like all these different languages and all these different countries. And so for us, we had to really like set the stage and introduce who these players are, what the rules of the game are, how you make money, how you advance, how do you get into majors, like all that stuff. And for season two, like, we don't have to do that anymore. We can just put you right into the action. We also don't even really have to introduce these players because you already know them. We're assuming you've started watching season one. So we don't really have to go and say, here's who Rory McIlroy is. Here's who, you know, Dustin Johnson is. We can just show, we just put you back in their lives, like right in the moment in that verite, and like just pull you along the story. So, you know, I thought that was a fair critique. I'm the biggest golf like super fan and golf sicko. And, you know, it's part of making a show for giant audience that goes far beyond just the hardcore golfers. But the good news for those people, if you are listening to this podcast, I'm assuming you're a hardcore golf fan. So you don't have to waste a lot of time explaining what a cut is, given the drama of this season and just kind of how much more it pulls you into the narrative.
So once again, listeners, we're talking to the executive producer of Netflix's Full Swing, Chad Mumm. Chad, thanks so much for joining us today. Maybe just one or two more questions for you really quick. I've got one that is a little bit off kilter here, maybe a step aside from Full Swing. Tell me what was going through your mind when you made this shot at St. Andrews.
Yeah.
Because it was incredible.
So I got invited. I went out to St. Andrews for the first time for the Open Championship during the filming of season one. And obviously, like, got to walk around the course, spent a lot of time out there, didn't get to play it. I was very fortunate to be invited to go participate in this RNA golf summit that they hosted, which is apparently like they do every 4 years, but it had been canceled because of COVID. So it had been like 8 years since they did it. So they invited me out. And part of the, you know, bribery was that they had a tea time at St. Andrews. If I came all the way from Los Angeles to St. Andrews to, you know, do a panel with them. And of course I'd like be happy to come either way, but that was enough to get me on a flight across the ocean. And so, yeah, so we played St. Andrews. It was my first time ever playing it. I had a really great group of people playing with us. I don't really film my golf rounds. I'm like, I love golf. I just like want to play. I'm not like a person who films shots. But you know, you get to the road hole, like you got to film it. I think I filmed my tee shot. I hit the fairway, by the way, on one, but I get to 17. I'm like, you got to film it. So I give the caddy or whoever, like the phone, you know, do the whole setup. Here we are at the road hole. First tee ball, just absolutely blast it right off the roof of the hotel. I'm like, that's OB. So I hit a provisional. Turns out my first ball had bounced off the roof back into play. I had like 250 into the green. So the guy hands me like my 2-iron. I bust it over the green. Actually, probably the best swing I made all day was like that second shot into the road off the roof. I thought I was going to be on the green. It ends up rolling through the green. I'm down there on the road itself. And the summer before, I had been there watching all these professionals like put the ball there and hit that exact shot. And none of them used a wedge. They all putted it. And the way that grass looks is it's kind of like thick. You wouldn't think a ball would bounce through it. But I watched Victor Hovland putt it. I watched Ian Poulter putt it. And so I was like, oh, I guess you just putt it from there. So I pull out the Scotty, go down there. I'm like, you better film it. And so, you know, I guess just got lucky, bash it into the hill. It pops up, rolled all the way across the green into the hole for a birdie. So I told Keegan I'm 1-under lifetime on the road hole. And he said, probably best to leave it at that. You know, it's like a lot of guys out here would take that score any day on that hole. So yeah, it was memorable. The funny part about that is the next day we played Carnoustie, and I was that moment I posted on Instagram, it went, you know, pretty viral. And I was on the tee. It was like raining, so I had a bunch of rain gear on. It was like a hat, and I don't know. You couldn't really. I'm not recognizable anyway, but like whatever. You couldn't tell who I was. And the caddies were talking about the shot on the tee. Like these Carnoustie caddies, these Scottish guys, were like, "Did you see that yank make that shot off the road yesterday?" And they were like, "Yeah, that was the full swing guy. What'd you think of full swings?" And then they're like talking about the show, and I was like, "Hey guys, that was me." And they you know thought it was hilarious.
That's wild.
So yeah, that was a memorable one for sure.
No, I think I'm just very excited to see the second season. I think one of the things that that I loved was having people that I'm friends with who they're not like, you know, golf psychos like myself, who watched last season and they like understood the people that I talk about all the time, and they started to understand what, you know, the sport is, and they could kind of have conversations with me about the sport. And so that was really exciting for me. So I'm excited to see what comes in season two, and see kind of how the audience continues to grow from here. I think, I guess one of the things is, you know, as this show helps grow the game, and we look at these tournaments like Waste Management, for example, you know, a couple weekends ago where the crowds are just massive, and you know, granted, part of the uncontrollableness was the alcohol, not the crowds, but you know, where these crowds are getting just, you know, massive. You know, do you take credit for that, for these crowds kind of getting bigger at all of these tournaments? Like, you know, do you pat yourself on the back a little bit for that, for people?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's all me, definitely. No,
I'm not saying all you, but like, you know, do you take a little bit of, you know, pride in that?
Of course, yeah, and look, you know, the PGA Tour and Netflix have like quantified, you know, the growth of how attendance went up and viewership went up, and a lot of people who watched the show sort of watched the PGA Tour on TV for the first time. That stuff's awesome, and I think that what I'm most proud of is like the anecdotal stories, like Nikki, you just told, where you've got friends that don't consider themselves golf fans, but you know, maybe they started watching the show because someone in their household was watching it, and they just kind of got sucked in because of the human stories. And, you know, there's flashy houses and private jets, and it's this kind of cool mix of like athletics and sport, but also just this like beautiful, scenic, like relaxing world of golf, and how those two things kind of come crashing together with some like real saucy human drama. I am just proud that we've made the most out of the access and the opportunity that we had. And I think like for season two, you know, we started the season saying, like, no sophomore slump. Like, this is the difference between a show that can run for a decade or more, or a one and done is like the second season. And, you know, season one, we were really lucky. A lot of people watched it. A lot of people fell in love with it. You know, we had a novelty factor because it was new. So how do you come back and how do you level it up and how do you make it better? You know, now we've done it once. We know it works. We know it doesn't. Like, no sophomore slumps. And I will say, like, I think the season two is just that much better than season one. I think it levels up the context. It levels up the stakes. You know, the characters that you might have fallen in love with, you know, we see them go through amazing times and hard times and everything in between. And the new characters just bring so much of a spark to the series. So I'm super proud. Obviously, our team works like tirelessly to deliver this thing and to make it. And it's, you know, somehow condensing 900 hours and 10,000 hours of archive down into 8 hours of TV, or really like 6.5 hours of TV. It's just a monumental team effort. And we've got amazing support from Netflix and the PGA Tour and the majors and the governing bodies and the players and their agents. Like, they believe in it and they let us in. And without that, like, we'd really have nothing. So I'm excited for everybody to check it out. I really do want to hear about it. I'm just at Chad Mum on Twitter. So fire your hot takes at me. Tell me what you want to see for future seasons. You know, tell me what you think of season two, but I'm excited for you all to come in and check it out.
I think one of my absolute favorite things I saw last season was when we were at the Players. It was shortly, which is a couple of weeks after the season one came out, was there was a huge following behind Sahith Tagala. And but more than the people following him were the people asking his dad for photos. And I think that like that goes to show, just like you were saying, that the people who just latch onto these stories and the characters that you're building in the show. So yeah,
it's super cool to see.
Yeah,
it definitely is. And we're gonna see so much more, I'm sure. Full Swing season two airs March 6th on Netflix, folks. Be sure to go out and check it out. Chad, thanks so much for coming on again. We are so excited to watch this, and we'll keep an eye out and we will send our takes your way on Twitter.
Awesome. All right, Adam. All right, Nikki. Thank you both for having me. It's always a pleasure. Hopefully I'll see you next year.